City of Beatrice versus Mainz. And Mr. Barber, you may approach. Again, this is City of Beatrice versus Mainz. You may proceed.
Members of the court, good afternoon. My name is Terry Barber. I represent Mr. Mainz, who is the appellant, who has quite a history with the City of Beatrice. Because today, for instance, we have in front of us not one and not 10, but 21 cases that are consolidated for argument, each of which has to do with an execution that was commenced by the city to collect some county court judgments. And after they transcribed the judgments to the district court, then they filed the precipice for execution. The notice goes out to the debtor, who then made several responses, one of which was to request a hearing on his right to exemptions, one of which was a motion to quash for a couple of different reasons, and we also have the intervener, Reinke, in the case. Because of the rather expeditious manner in which this was handled, I think that the standard of review is, for lack of a better term, kind of a fresh set of eyes. In other words, I think that we're talking about a matter of law in virtually every aspect of this appeal. And I think we've got four elements at play. We have an element that has to do with Mr. Mainz's entitlement to an exemption. The exemption he was claiming was that for a disabled veteran. It's at 25-1559. And the second element is a matter of whether these judgments that were transcribed were dormant. And the third item is it's dependent on first element, but the third element is whether the going forward with the executions would have been futile. And then we have the question as to whether the intervener had a protectable interest.
Let's talk about the intervener quickly. She did not appeal, correct?
She did not.
So isn't that issue moot then?
Well, I don't know about moot, but I'm not sure that as I was driving down the street this morning, it struck me that there's a standing issue or a potential for one there.
Right, okay.
Returning to the first element, if I might, the first element is whether, well, what the judge decided was that Mr. Mainz was a convict, so he's not entitled to any exemptions under 292704. The brief goes into our arguments on this point, but we think the court erred in making that determination in just very expeditiously, very summarily saying he's not entitled. The only evidence that there was with respect to his convict status was evidence that these judgments that were being transcribed to the district court related to cases in which he was found to have violated a Beatrice City ordinance, which is the ordinance 16623, which has to do with junk motor vehicles, and that was a criminal action, and that makes him a convict, and so forth. But under Hauser, which takes us way back in time, and coming forward from then, it's long been recognized that code violation cases, municipal code violations, are, although they might look like criminal cases, are really civil proceedings to collect a penalty.
And Mr. Barber, in that regard, I have a question for you. Looking at our prior case that was decided in 2014 with regard to these violations of the city ordinance, in that your client argued that city code was invalid because it criminalizes conduct which is not criminal. And then you also argued that it was a violation of, or there was a double jeopardy problem because it's two criminal convictions. So isn't the position you're taking now inconsistent with the position that was taken in the 2014 case?
I think that it certainly sounds like it. But I think that, what we're dealing with today in these cases is the facts that were before the district court in these 21 cases. And the particular issue of exemption wasn't in front of us. There are principles that are observed in ordinance violations similar to a criminal proceeding. But again, that doesn't alter the matter that it, in essence, is civil, and Nebraska recognizes it as being a civil proceeding.
Is the penalty for those code violations, is it like a lot of misdemeanors? It's a fine and or jail up to a year, or is it just a fine?
I believe it's just a fine. Looking at 16623, which is the code provision for the city, Part B, any person violating a fine not exceeding $500, except for a first offense, it's a $100 fine. So there is no jail time as such.
Just so I can make sure I understand this, would you agree with me that as to your position here, as to whether or not you're entitled to exemptions and whether or not it's dormant, it all turns on whether 16623 is in fact a criminal proceeding or a civil proceeding?
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, please.
And the city takes a position on this particular issue that I didn't accurately state the law, that there's a footnote to the law that says if the matter that the code provision finds offensive or the ordinance is also criminal under a state statute, then you turn out to be a convict. Now, the difficulty with that is the authorizing provision for 16623 is Nebraska statute 16230. And 16230 doesn't criminalize anything. What it does is it says that a city of a first class by ordinance may require lots, may by ordinance declare it to be a nuisance, and so forth. So it's an authorization, and the point being that if the city of Beatrice hadn't passed 16623, you couldn't have a violation in the city of Beatrice, not under the Nebraska statute. County attorney couldn't have brought the action. So it's a civil proceeding under cases as old as Hauser.
Let me reframe it for you, if I could, too. In McLaughlin versus State, the quote is, prosecution for the violation of a city ordinance, which does not embrace any offense made criminal by the laws of the state, while in a form of criminal prosecution, is in fact a civil proceeding. That's the question for us, right? Whether
yes.
or not 16623... Does it embrace an offense made criminal by the laws of the state? That's the test, correct?
Yes, sir.
Now, does not 18-17-20 by the state telling cities that they can in fact define nuisance, aren't they embracing that this is a criminal offense and you define it for purposes of your jurisdiction?
If they, Your Honor, were directing that the cities do that, that would be one thing. But if all they do is authorize it, the legislative function of providing what powers a municipality may have, then I don't believe that triggers the result. Quickly, if I might, on the, we still have three to go, but I'll rely on the brief for what I can't spit out here real quick. But the second element has to do with dormancy, and I think that's a pretty clear one under the statutes. Judgment's not acted on within 5 years, it becomes dormant, and you can't do anything with it unless you revive it under the statutory framework for doing so.
Unless it's criminal, right? And then we're in a different statute. Would you agree with that? Not the civil execution statute.
Well, the one thing that I think is important here, or something at least to keep in mind, is the fact that each of these 21 cases was separately filed, and they were separately docketed, as civil cases. And the procedure that was used in sending out the the execution copy to the debtor and inviting them, or at least advising him that he had a right to a hearing on his exemptions, whatever they might be. That was all civil procedure. So I think, what would I say? We're kind of stuck with what we've got here. And I think that we've got here a civil matter and...
Could he have asked for a jury trial?
No.
And the reason for that, because it's a civil matter, if it's a civil matter, why could he not have asked for a jury trial?
Because, well, I may have spoken too quickly, Judge. I'm not sure. I haven't explored that.
And the burden of proof that the court applied in the underlying proceeding was beyond reasonable doubt. They treated it like a criminal matter.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Barber.
Thank you.
And how much time did we go over with? Okay, please add that to the appellee's time. And is it Ms. Templemeyer? Or excuse me, Ms. Stark? Okay.
May it please the court. My name is Abby Stark. I'm the city attorney for the city of Beatrice. I inherited this case from two other city attorneys before me who have been working on it, so I'll do my best here. So as has already been stated, most of this turns on whether this is a civil or a criminal proceeding. We cited 29-2407 saying that judgments for fines and costs in a criminal case are a lien and no property of any convict is exempt because we believe it's a criminal case. The appellant alleges that it is, I'm sorry. The appellant believes that it's a civil case despite, as you mentioned, his previous statement in underlying criminal cases that the section violated here criminalizes behavior that is not criminal. His position is that 16230 criminalizes nothing, and his argument to support that position, he is correct that Chapter 16 does enumerate the powers granted to first-class cities. However, the grant of power in Section 16230 is immediately followed by Paragraph 3, which reads as follows, quote, any owner or occupant of a lot of piece of ground shall, upon conviction of violating any ordinance authorized under this section, be guilty of a Class 5 misdemeanor. And if that isn't the state expressly criminalizing a violation of any city ordinance written pursuant to that section, then I don't know what is. The appellant also takes issue with the term convict. He notes that in 2005, LB 53 replaced the word convict with the word felon in a few sections of Chapter 29, and he concludes that that means felon and convict are interchangeable, mean the same thing, essentially. And that was done to harmonize provisions. I think that misrepresents LB 53. While harmonizing provisions was mentioned in the bill, its primary and stated intent was to restore a felon's right to vote upon completion of his or her sentence. It seems to me that the harmonizing of provisions actually referred to the fact that in order to carry out the stated intent, various sections in different chapters of the revised statutes required revision so that the restoration of the voting right would be automatic.
Hey, I'll stop you for 1 second. You quoted, was it 16230?
Yeah, correct.
Of what? What is that?
The state statute. I have it here if you'd like it. That is a statute that authorizes a first class city to declare it to be a nuisance, to so on and so forth.
Okay. Can you address the dormancy issue?
Yes, I can. So the other top issue here is dormancy. He argues that the judgment should become dormant as of May 18th, 2017. And relies upon 25-1542, which states that a judgment becomes dormant if no execution is taken out within 5 years of the judgment date. The city of Beatrice does not agree that the judgments were dormant because the original 2012 trial court judgment in each case, while affirmed in part, was also reversed in part. Therefore, the judgments on mandate issued in 2015 are what the appellee is actually collecting on. The precipice for execution in all of these cases, including the four that have already been successfully executed on, lists the amounts to be collected, which coincide with the amounts listed on the judgments on mandate from 2015 included in the transcript. The fact that the trial court's original decision was reversed in part makes these judgments on mandate a different and essentially new judgment than the originals from 2012.
Well, assuming they're civil for a second, did the city have executed on the judgment back in April of 2012 when the judgments were first entered?
Well, I think the trial court judge actually delayed for a month or so, but yes, that May 18th date, was it? Yeah.
So it wasn't a supersedious posted or something in connection with this?
Correct. There was not. Up until, I think, March of 2018, Mr. Mines did walk in with a little under $30,000 in cash and post the supersedious bond so that we couldn't execute.
But, so in that regard, if it's civil, would that not be the beginning date as it relates to this claim of dormancy? Wouldn't you have to go from that date as it relates to the five-year period if we find these are civil proceedings?
If that original judgment had stood, had been affirmed all through the courts, I believe so, yes. But the fact that it was confirmed in part and reversed in part, the original judgment was to collect, I think it was $1,299 in each case. Two of the counts in each got reversed, so then it turned up just being $1,099 in each case. So the judgment was different. The one that was entered in 2015 was not.
So you're saying that resets the clock for the five-year dormancy period?
I think so, yes.
Do you have any authority for that, or is that you're just reasoning?
Not especially. The case law that Mr. Barber cites with, I think it's Harvey v. Godding, it's from 1906, and it does indicate that absent a supersedious, we can execute and the five-year period runs. But it also does mention in there, granted it's dated, but it starts to say that the reason why the clock didn't restart was because the judgment in that case was not reversed. It was the same judgment that was originally, that had originally come out. It was just 5 years later.
And you're saying the reversal here and the issuing of the mandate following the reversal would start a new time period?
Yes, Your Honor. And in the alternative, if the court finds that it was the 2012 judgments being executed on and the differing 2015 judgments on mandate did not constitute a new judgment being entered, then I would direct your attention to the second half of 25-1542, which appellant relies on. It states, quote, "Nothing in this section shall be construed to defeat the lien of any judgment creditor who fails to take out execution and cause a levy to be made as provided in this section when such failure is occasioned by appeal," continues to list a few other circumstances. So yes, the appellant is correct that a supersedious bond was not posted until March of 18, and the appellee could have attempted to execute on the appellant's properties during the pendency of appeals on the initial criminal cases. The reason why the appellee waited to execute is because decades of past experience with the appellant has left the appellee as well as the local trial courts nearly positive that the appellant will pursue every possible opportunity to appeal in a case in which he opposes the appellee. So we waited to execute until the appellant had his day in court, in every court that would listen, and the U.S. Supreme Court denied certiorari, after which we began to seek to execute on those. It's time that this case is settled once and for all. These are cases from 2011 was when this happened. It's time for them to come to a conclusion. He has the money to pay the fines, clearly, since he posted the supersedious bond. It's just kind of a game, and it's a waste of the court's time and a waste of the city's time as well.
Other questions? Thank you. Then, I'm going to start. The case will be taken under submission. We'll issue a decision thereon. The parties are excused, and we are adjourned.